Well, we should be thankful that we have an opportunity to gather tonight since we lost last week with the weather. And so before we do this week's memory verse, I thought I might give you a chance. Does anybody want to say last week's memory verse? Does everybody remember it? Let's say it together. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Yeah. And so, since that was the one that I was sure that you knew, now does anyone want to say John 8, 31 and 32 for us? You probably know 32 pretty easy. Anyone remember?
Knows it.
I have confidence in Pam being. I was going to put Neil on the spot, but I won't do that to him. So John 8:31 says, to the Jews who had believed in him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples, and then you will know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And so that great passage. And so this week our reading was chapter 8 through 12 of the Gospel of John. And what a joy it is to read any of the Gospels. And we've spent now 4 months reading in the Gospels. And just love reading in John, the different perspective that he brings. Even in comparison to the other three, and appreciate that perspective. And so as I thought about which of these chapters to cover tonight, and I should be back Sunday morning, but Brother Frederick's going to preach for us, so you want to pray for him as he preaches. But I thought we would look at chapter 10 tonight. And one of my favorite images that I've always, in John, one of my favorite parts of John are the I am statements of Jesus.
Yes.
Where he says, I am the light, I am the world. I'm the door. And tonight we're going to look at that one, I'm the great shepherd. Yeah. And so I've always loved those. And of course, we're very familiar with the shepherd imagery from Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. But God as our shepherd, and it's an important word because shepherd is actually what the word that is usually translated pastor. That's what the word shepherd means. A pastor means a shepherd. So the importance of that word. And so God is our shepherd, and Jesus here is the good shepherd. And so there's some great imagery here as we read this. So let's read the first part of John 10 together and talk a little bit about what he has to say to us about Jesus as our good shepherd. And he says, I tell you the truth, the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of his sheep. And the watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. And he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them. And his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. And Jesus used this figure of speech, but they still did not understand what he was telling them. And so the first thing that I want you to get is in this picture of God as our shepherd, as Jesus as our shepherd, as our good shepherd, is the fact that the shepherd knows his sheep. And then we'll talk about the sheep know their shepherd. But that's part of that relationship that we have with him, that he knows us. He knows us. He knows who we are. He knows what we're going through. And he knows those that belong to his flock, and that's important. D.T. Niles, Frederick, who is the longtime pastor in Harlem of the Baptist Church there, he tells a story about how he met a young Indian shepherd with a large flock. And he asked him, "How many sheep do you have?" And the boy said, "I don't know. I can't count." And D.T. Niles asked him, he said, "Well, how do you know you haven't lost one?" And the boy said, "I don't know, but I know each one. I can't count the sheep, but I know each of their names, and I know them. I would know if one of them was missing." I want you to think about that. I don't know, I can't count, so I don't even know how many I got, but I know each of them, and if one of them was missing, I would know it. And that's true with God, right? He knows our name. And matter of fact, he knows how many there are too. And you remember the parable that Jesus taught us with in Luke 15, where he said what? That if he had 100 sheep and one was lost and the 99 were there, he would go find that one that was lost, because he knows who they are and he knows where they are. A shepherd knows our name. Jim Henry said it this way. He said, "Jesus knows my name. Not only does he know my name," Jim Henry would say, "Jesus knows my name, my needs, my desires. He knows me. He knows me." And I want you to think about that. That's how Jesus is a good shepherd. And he's not going to, if we get lost, he's going to come find us. He knows what we need, and he provides for us. He cares for us. He knows our name. You know, we sing that song sometimes, "He Knows My Name." But I want you to think about the personal, intimate nature of that, that he knows who we are. He doesn't just know about us. He knows who we are. And if we get lost, he'll come find us. Many of you know, because I use it especially in times of sickness or other things, but one of the special verses in my life is Nahum 1:7, and it says, "The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knows those who take refuge in him." And so no matter what you're going through, he knows about it. You know, there are things you didn't share in here while we were doing prayer requests, but you know what? God already knows it. He knows you. He knows, as Jim Henry said, he knows your needs. He knows your desires. He knows you. So the shepherd knows his sheep. There are others that try to come into the flock, and they kind of try to come in inappropriate ways. But the shepherd comes and he calls us out by name, so that we can follow him. And that's important, you know, if we're his sheep, that we follow him. Because not only does he know us, but we need to what? Know him. To know his voice. To recognize where he's trying to lead us, and to follow him. So Jesus explained it to them that way. Now look at the next part. Therefore, verse 7, "Therefore Jesus said again, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. But I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved, and he will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have come that they might have life and have it to the full. So the shepherd not only knows his sheep and cares for his sheep, but the shepherd also protects his sheep and saves his sheep. There in verse 9, I'm the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. And again, that's in the passive voice. It's something that we don't do. It's something Jesus does for us. He saves us. He comes and he finds us and he puts us in the fold and he protects us. I was reading in one of the commentaries a writer named George Adam Smith, one that I really wasn't familiar with, but he made this statement. He said that he was at a sheep pen in the Middle East, and he saw the fence, and but there was no gate, there was no door, it was open. So he asked the shepherd boy, well, don't you need a gate to close them up? And he said, no, I am the door. Yeah, I am the gate. And he said, what I do is, he said, I lead all of the sheep inside, and then I lay down over the opening. And they can't go out over my body, and no wolf can come in unless he crosses my body. I am the door. And so that's what Jesus is saying here. He's the door. Nobody can come at us except through him. And he leads us to that place of safety. He protects us. He saves us. And he is the door that prevents us and protects us. And so he is our door. Then in verse 11, he says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life. Now, we're going to come back to verse 10, so don't think I've left it. We're going to come back to it in a minute. But verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks and the flock scatters. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. But I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen, and I'll bring them also, and they too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. And the reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. And no one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have the authority to lay it down and the authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. Now, there are several things in there. And the first one, obviously, is that a shepherd saves his sheep by risking his own life and giving his own life for them. Jesus died for us. He laid his life down for us. But I also don't want you, and so he's willing to make that sacrifice to take on the sheep. He's not just a hired hand. For me, the imagery of this is so important, you know, because we think sometimes, couldn't God have saved us some other way? Couldn't he have sent somebody other than his son to die for us? And the answer is no, because that person would be a hired hand. One, none of us could live up to that. No one else could have lived up to that perfect life to be the perfect sacrifice. But there was something about it being him, being his son, that proved in that willingness to die for us. And one other thing I want you to see, and this verse has always intrigued me, but he clearly says, and we see this in other places too, they couldn't take my life from me. I chose to lay my life down. And sometimes we miss that. We think, oh, Pilate killed Jesus, or the Romans killed Jesus, or the Jews killed Jesus. No, Jesus willingly gave up his life for us. You know, he began his ministry, and we talked about this months ago now, in one of the other Gospels. He began his ministry being tempted by the devil, right? And what did he say? You could call 10,000 angels and they would come to rescue you. Jesus could have done that anywhere along the line. He could have stopped the crucifixion. He could have called down angels to protect him. He could have left and gotten away. He walked, you know, read on, in just a minute, he's going to walk through them and they're not going to be able to hurt him. But he chose to lay down his life as a sacrifice for us. Man couldn't kill him. He allowed them, for our sake, to crucify him. And don't miss the other part of that is, too, he laid his life down, but he also had the authority to do what? To take it up again. And so it wasn't just his death, but it's also his resurrection. It was given to him by the authority of God. I received this from my Father. So Jesus wasn't killed because of the plotting of a few men. Jesus gave his life so that we could have life. So we see his provision for us. He provided guidance and he leads us. He calls us and we follow. Again, don't miss even how simple that is, but that's how we ought to live our life. Following him wherever he leads me. You know, one of my favorite hymns has always been, "He leadeth me, he leads me. By his own hand, he leads me." And it's just willing to follow him. Let him lead us, let him guide us, let him protect us, let him sustain us, let him give us peace. But not only does he provide all that for us, he also provides life for us. That shepherd, that thief that comes in over the fence, that thief that comes in who's not the shepherd and comes for what? He comes to kill, steal, and destroy. The evil one, anybody who's not the legitimate shepherd, anybody that's not Jesus, they come for one reason, and that's to destroy us. But Jesus came what? That we might have life and have it more abundantly. That we might have life, not just physical life, but eternal life. And even have it in a more abundant way, fulfilling way than any way we could ever imagine. That's what he offers us. That's what he gives us, that abundant life. You know, that passage has always been one of my favorites, that he came that we might have life, and as the NIV says, and life to have it to the full. Everything that we could experience in life, it's only found in one place, with Jesus. Anything else you get, that's just a poor substitute from a false shepherd. But from Jesus is the only way to find that true, full life. He is the good shepherd. Now, he lays it out there for them. You can follow me, and have fullness of life. You can follow me and have my protection, have my blessing, have my leadership, or not. What are you going to do? And so he lays this out. And again, he's telling this, to the Pharisees. And that last portion that I read, I want to mention it to you. He says, you know, that he has other sheep. So who was he talking to? He was talking to the Jews. But when he's talking about the other sheep, he's talking about us. And he's here talking to the Jews. And in just a moment, we're going to hear that even though he's saying, I want you to follow me, I'm your shepherd, you should know me, you should follow me, but they refuse to do that. And what he says, then, you know, you're going to go your own way, but I've got others who will follow me. And he's talking about the Gentiles and carrying the gospel to the Gentiles, to us, so that we can hear his voice and follow in him. And so we have this promise here of him being our shepherd, not just those of the Jews, but to all people. And why? Because he's laid down his life for us all. All right, any questions about this part of the chapter? Well,
I heard it said, and these little additions, just, I don't know, at least to me, made it real, that the thief comes to kill your joy, that's the added part, comes to steal your faith, another added part, and comes to destroy your family. And I've often thought of that, and boy, that is what the devil does.
Yeah, he steals our joy.
Kills our faith. Destroys our family.
And that's, you know, it may appear to be something better, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Why? Because he's a hired hand who runs off when we need him. Only Jesus loved us enough to lay down his life for us. And so we know him and we listen to him. So how, you know, again, remember he had already said they didn't understand, so he explains it to them again. And this time they begin getting it a little better, but they still don't respond. So look at the right way. So look at verse 19. And at these words, the Jews were again divided. What does that mean? That means some of them believed him and some of them didn't. And so it caused this division between them. Either you believe he is or, let me read all of it. At these words, the Jews were again divided. And many of them said, he is demon-possessed and a raving madman. Why listen to him? But others said, these are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of a blind? And, you know, I remember the first time I heard it, I probably was in college, and somebody was arguing about Jesus, and the question was, is Jesus who he said he was? And there are people, you'll run into people who will say, well, he was just a good man, or he was a great teacher. And here's the problem with it. Those aren't acceptable answers, because there's really only two answers. Either he was who he said he was, the Son of God, the living God come in flesh, or he was a madman, an insane man who thought he was God and wasn't. You can't have it both. You can't have a third option. Because either, you know, what kind of great teacher goes around thinking that they're God? And you know. And so that's the option. And that's what they said here. One group of them said, he's a madman. He's a raving lunatic. He's got to be demon-possessed. He thinks he's God. He's got to be demon-possessed. He's a madman. And the other said, no, he's not a madman. Somebody who was a madman couldn't do what he's doing. Somebody who was demon-possessed couldn't do what he's doing. And so you either accept him or you reject him. There's no middle ground. You can't say he's a great man, but he's not who he said he was. Either is who he said he was or he's not. And that's the choice that we see them have to make. Some believed and some didn't. And it continues. Time passes the next day. Then came the Feast of Dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter. The Feast of Dedication, by the way, is what we would today call Hanukkah. It was a new festival that came in. It isn't in the Old Testament. It's a festival that came in under Judas Maccabeus in 164 B.C., following the desecration of the temple by the Syrian forces, specifically Antiochus Epiphanes, who led the Syrian army. If you remember the story, he came into the temple and he sacrificed a bull to the god Jupiter in the temple and desecrated the temple.
I thought he sacrificed a pig.
Pig, it was a pig. I misspoke. You're exactly right. It was the pig. And the reason it was a pig is because, again, the anti-pork commands. But yes, and he desecrated the temple. But it was to the god Jupiter or an equivalent of that of the Syrians. And then he, you know, of course, you have the whole Jewish rebellion and fight against that. And finally, the temple is restored and you remember the thing, they didn't have any oil to light the lamps in the temple, and they lit it, and it lasted for 8 days before they were able to get more, but it kept burning even when it should have been out. And so that's the miracle of that. That's what's called the Festival of Lights, the Feast of Lights, which, of course, Jesus is the light of the world, as we spoke about. So that's also tied into some of this discussion. And so it's that festival of Hanukkah, the festival of dedication, when they were rededicating the temple after they had recaptured it and cleaned it out. And so what is interesting about that is that festival really doesn't have anything to do with what happened in the Old Testament, but it is a celebration looking forward to the coming of the Messiah. And so a lot of that discussion is the Messiah coming? And here it is, he's just told them he wants to be their shepherd, and now they're saying, let's look for the Messiah, and he's standing right in front of them. And so look at the discussion that then follows there in verse 22. And then came the Feast of Dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter. And Jesus was in the temple area walking in Solomon's colonnade. And the Jews gathered around him saying, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Christ, tell us plainly." Now, again, where have they been? You know, twice he explained that he was the good shepherd, that he was laying down his life for him, he was going to call them and they should follow his voice. They would know him. And some believed and some didn't. And those who didn't believe thought he was a madman. And now those same people are coming and saying, now be straight with us. Are you claiming to be the Messiah or not? Are you the Messiah or not? And so now look at his answer. Are you saying that you're the disciple? Look at his answer. Jesus answered, "I did tell you, but you do not believe. The miracles I do in my Father's name speak for me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one can snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all, and no one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one." So he said, "Look, I told you. You just didn't believe me. I told you again, and you still didn't believe me. Now you're asking me a third time, and you still won't believe me. Why won't you believe me? Because you're not my sheep. Because if you believed me and you were my sheep, you would know who I am. You would follow me because I am your shepherd. And once you belong to me, I will take care of you. Nothing can snatch you out of my hand. I just finished having a conversation again, but this is one thing that is always difficult for us, and that is, can someone lose their salvation? And this is one of my favorite passages about that, because what Jesus tells us is the answer is no. Now this is what happens, and this is why we get confused, is because we can only judge on the inside. We don't know the genuineness of anybody else's heart or faith. So we only judge by appearances, but God knows the truth. And one of the things, since Sammy is speaking at the conference, one of the phrases that Sammy taught me that I love is, instead of saying, if saved, always saved, instead of saying, once saved, always saved, say, if saved, always saved. Because that's the truth. If somebody is saved, then they're always saved.
That's true.
If they're saved and they sin, are they still saved? Yes, because if they're saved, they've been forgiven for everything they've ever done and ever will do. But if they're saved, and so someone walks the aisle and gets baptized, makes some, says some prayer or something, what matters is, have they been regenerated? Have they been saved? If they've been saved, then they can never lose that salvation. Why? And this is the important thing, because he gave it to us. We didn't earn it. But the truth is, we didn't earn it. He gave it to us, and he's not going to take it back. But the picture that I love here is, look at what he says. He says, you are in my hands. And then he says, I'm in God's hands. And this is the way my pastor taught me this when I was at children's camp and when I was about 10 years old. This is what, his name is Dr. Jerry Brazil. This is what he said to me. He said, as a believer, you're resting in Jesus' hand. Jesus is resting in God's hand. If Satan wants to get through to you, he's got to whoop God, then he's got to whoop Jesus. And even if he could do that, which he can't, by the time he got to you, he'd be so tired you could handle him with one hand behind his back. Now, that's not theologically correct either. But what is theologically correct is, we're in Jesus' hand, and he's in God's hand, and nothing can get through that to get to you. You're his. He will protect you. And once you belong to him, nothing can take you away from him. Nothing can snatch you out of his hand. And I know there are times that people have the appearance of that. Look at Judas. Judas walked around as one of the disciples for 3 years. He was with Jesus. He heard Jesus teach all the time. If you would have asked on the outside, you would have said he was a believer. But what happened? He turned his back on God and betrayed. So what does that mean? That means to me he never was saved. Right? And so we see that with our eyes, but what we can't see and what we aren't. And here's the other part of that. We're not the one who makes that judgment. It's God. What we need to know is that, do we know Jesus? They listen to me. They know me. They follow me. And by the way, that follow me is a continuous action. It's not something you do once. It's something that continues on and on and on. And they are in my hand. And when that happens, he keeps us safe. And it's based upon him being with us. They're still not going to believe. They're going to call him blaspheming. They're going to try to stone him. But it's not going to happen. And so that's how the chapter ends. But we are past time.